I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. I am here with my husband and co-host, JC Hall. Welcome to the show, JC.
Hello.
So, we're a little bit late doing the Daily Journal today because I was on Newsmax, and they had contacted me and asked me to be on, I think it was yesterday, day before. No, it was the day before. And they asked me to send some of my Army pictures. And they wanted to talk about veterans issues is what they told me. And they wanted to talk about some politics. And when I got on the show this afternoon, which was pushed off because of Donald Trump's most awesome press conference, must I say, most often awesome. I am not a sycophant, but that was a most awesome press conference, and I seriously want to talk about that. But JC, you didn't get to hear what was going on the Newsmax thing, and we'll be posting the clip later, but they brought me on the show and said, Chris Ann, we are honoring a veteran every day this week on our show for Veterans Day. And cool. Oh my goodness, I did not even know that. I almost started crying. I'm almost crying right now. Crying right there when they said that. So I was like, for, you know, one of those rare moments when Chris Ann Hall was speechless. So I didn't even know. So I can't wait to see that clip. It was a little bit frustrating though, because towards the end, they had asked me, you know, we got into the part about me teaching the Constitution and how that transition took place. And he asked me, he said, he says, I don't mean to say this in an insulting way, but what do you find that the American people are most ignorant about when it comes to the Constitution? And I mentioned that, you know, it wasn't written by a bunch of rich elite white slave owners. And then I started talking about the separation of power between the state and the federal government. And I was just about to talk about the Supremacy Clause when some random call came on and bumped me off Skype. And I just, you know, I was talking to Janet about this. This is so frustrating. So I tried to call back the number to find out who it was. No answer, no voicemail. And so I Googled it.
Robocall.
It was a robocall. It was a number that belonged to three different people at the same time, none of them having a voicemail, all registered to voteorganize.org.
Wow.
So
they don't know the election's over?
No. Are you kidding me? Janet thinks it was a three-letter agency calling me to stop me talking about the limited nature of the federal government. And I don't know if I should be honored by the enemies that I've made or just ticked off. I get sick and tired of it. But anyway.
Actually, are we sure the election's over? Or Florida, they're still counting?
They're
Florida,
still
Georgia
counting.
Still counting?
Yeah, there's still a few states counting. Rick Scott, true to form, can't win an election, you know, without having some kind of controversy or some near miss at the ballots.
Every election he's had has been by 1 point.
I know, right? Yeah. And so that's why he has less than half a percentage point over Bill Nelson. So they're still counting that.
Yeah, that was always the weird part for me. I mean, you know how the party works, you know, Republican Party. I guess, I mean, I don't actually understand it. It's his turn or whatever. But so the guy, every election here in Florida, he won by a point.
Yeah.
And he's an awful, awful speaker.
Terrible.
He has no presence. He sounds, I mean.
He reminds me, because I don't know, maybe because he's thin and bald, he reminds me of the Slender Man. He has like the personality of the Slender Man.
Yeah.
And not from a homicidal kind of perspective, yeah. You know, so, but just bland.
Right. Very milquetoast. You know, no presence. So I always thought,
I've actually, when I worked for the state of Florida, I was actually involved in a press conference that he was doing at my department. And there were probably only 30 people in the room plus him giving that. And I kept thinking, oh, dear God, please help this man. He was the worst speaker I had ever really, especially for somebody in politics.
And he admits that. Right, he says he's not a good speaker. The peculiar thing is, so he sort of got better. Like, that's not saying much because he was so bad.
Yeah,
but the thing about it,
a little better.
But the thing about it, why did he get better? Well, he writes his stuff down. So now when you listen to him, it's not. I mean, you have to understand what you're listening to is not a bad speaker at that point. Like, he can't even read it well.
You were saying he actually reads Spanish better than English.
Yeah, when he was, I guess it was his acceptance speech, quote unquote.
Well, he can't really say that because he hasn't actually won yet.
Well, I mean, yesterday he came
Nelson
out.
Nelson didn't concede.
Well, whatever. He gave his victory speech regardless yesterday. And part of it was, you know, I mean, he does this often. He apparently knows Spanish, but he was reading the Spanish and the English. So he read his statement for the most part, and reading the Spanish. And he actually read the Spanish better. His Spanish sounded better than his English.
Right.
So anyway, I always thought it was bizarre that, you know, that's the candidate they would choose, because you've got Bill Nelson. This guy, as Trump said in his press conference, is good at winning elections, or is a professional at winning elections, right? This guy's been in office 46 years. It's old hat to him. So, and Rick Scott's not a hugely popular guy, as I think is reflected in the results.
What made it worse was Brian Steele was on. They played the clip of Brian Steele giving his speech. He's the guy that in Wisconsin that is succeeding Paul Ryan.
Okay.
And so we got to see Brian Steele's speech right before Rick Scott.
Right.
And you actually stopped. You were, I don't know what you were doing in the room. You stopped and you thought, wow, this guy is an amazing speaker.
Right. We were watching it and he was sort of wrapping up, and I turned to you and I said, wow, that guy's like a presidential speaker. He really has presence and a good speaker. And then they said, okay, we're going to go to Rick Scott. And I went, oh, wow, the other end of the spectrum.
And everybody, that's exactly what he said and how he said it, too.
So, it you know, if you really want to, if you wanted to lock down the Senate race in Florida, I just thought from the very beginning Rick Scott was a bizarre choice for that, because he's not.
You know, he's been a bizarre choice from the beginning, and I'm just, you know, but he's he's very corporately tied. Well, no, because I don't understand it in 2010.
No, I'm saying, no, you can understand the reasoning that the people gave.
Because he's an outsider.
Well, that was the thing. We need a businessman.
We need a businessman,
right? So you could understand that. It was based on that as far as this persona of being a businessman, but they didn't know anything about him.
No.
And they never heard him, but it was that sort of thing. We need a businessman. Now, after that, when you know the guy and what have you, you wonder, okay, why is there so much backing?
I don't know.
So it's just interesting. So I think,
you guys know how we feel about Rick Scott anyway.
I'm not a Rick Scott hater. I'm just saying he's not a strong, candidate, and he's, you know, he has a
after what he did to Sheriff Nicholas Finch, I can't even like him.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's just one of those things. He made a clear line in the sand that he was not going to be pro-liberty. He was not going to be pro-constitution.
Right.
And that he was not going to listen to people who were trying to advise him on that. And he ended up crashing and burning over that thing with Nicholas Finch. And the thing that really irritates me is that the Republican Party covered for him the entire time, swept the entire thing under the rug. And so most Floridians don't even know how Rick Scott attacked the Second Amendment, the right of the – well, I guess it wouldn't be the Second Amendment here in Florida, but it was – I forget which amendment it is in the Florida Constitution. But he attacked the right of the people to keep and bear arms and the authority of the sheriff to defend our liberties.
Yeah, so I'm not surprised it's closed and – the, you know, but that's what parties do. They did the same thing for Marco and his credit card problems. So, you know, that's not surprising. Now, the interesting thing is how this being characterized in the media. This midterm flip is customary. I mean, this is what happens. Now, why this one is unusual, and this is bizarre to me that even Fox is not really, really sort of expressing this narrative. This is really one of the most pathetic flips of the House or of Congress in recent midterm history, right? Barack Obama lost way more seats.
Yes.
In 2010.
And Clinton, he lost Senate seats
right,
in
Clinton
2010
lost
too.
Way more seats in 94. So this is one of the most tepid House flips in recent history.
And I was
because this is what so they make it out like, oh, look what the Democrats did.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, this is what happens in midterms. This is
right.
expected. This is what
right.
always happens. This is a customary. So this customary House flip is remarkable in the fact at how tepid it was. They only gained 20-some-odd seats, maybe 30
right.
by the time it's over. That's really kind of lame as far as that goes. So for Trump to come out and say, to characterize this as a victory is now he always is going to do that.
I know.
but it's not a big stretch.
Everything's
if you think
a victory
about it.
For him.
But in the context of midterm, customary midterm, you know, trends, he's really not that far off the mark.
Well, and I was actually talking to Pastor Brown after all of this, and you know, he said, you know, it really isn't that big of a change because a lot of the Republicans that were lost in this primary or in this midterm were rhinos anyway.
Well, it's a big change in the sense that it's a lot Trumpier Republican Party.
It is a lot Trumpier Republican Party.
And it's really like Pastor said, it's really more of a purification.
Right.
He really, when he says this is victory, he ran out the establishment.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here with my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall. You know, it is interesting how it all worked out. And what I think is interesting is that people are talking about, and this is something that they asked, a lot of people have been asking me on social media, what do you think? Well, obviously, constitutionally speaking, the Senate is infinitely more important to the president
than the
House.
Yeah.
So having a Senate who just gained in its strength is a testament to the president himself, because the Senate is more directly related to the president.
Right.
And I think the lack of loss in the Senate, which we've seen historically during the midterms, the party in power loses on both sides, but the Republicans didn't actually lose in the Senate. They gained. And I don't think that has anything to do with the Republican Party.
And the flip in the House was very minimal.
Yeah. And I think that the gain in the Senate is the nation's approval of Donald Trump.
Well, that's what Trump, you hear Trump saying. Again, Trump is always going to say that, no matter what happens. And I keep, it kind of crystallized the watching this guy now. Everything, he does not focus on the negative.
Everything
he looks
is
at the positive, he looks at the victories, which is funny because when you look at successful people, like I had a book, I think about, I don't remember what was the top 25 CEOs and wealthy people, whatever. And they all have that same mentality. It mm-hmm. was a focus. Yeah, you learn from mistakes, but you focus on the positive, the victories. And I mean, Trump's like that to the nth degree. But at the same time, you know, like you were saying, you saw these gains and then that in the House. I mean, it really was. It's kind
well,
of a victory in the sense.
Well, constitutionally speaking,
in that sense,
Trump is going to have more authority in treaties now. He's going to have more authority in Supreme Court nominees, in cabinet placements. Look, this is the time when Donald Trump needs to fire Jeff Sessions. This is the time when Donald Trump needs to clean house in the executive branch because he has a strong Senate who will back his nominations. Not only that, Donald Trump is not a social conservative. So flipping the House Democrat is not, you're not going to see the blockages that the media is hyping up. You're going to see a block on the wall. I truly believe you're going to see a block on the wall. But for other social programs, replacing Obamacare and other programs, you're not going to see any blockages on that sort of thing. Now, what you might see is the spinning of it. It's not Donald Trump's idea. It's our idea.
So
they'll go with it because he's not a social conservative.
You mean fiscal conservative in these social spin? Well, social conservative generally, you know, people use that term in regards to stance on abortion, gay rights.
Oh,
marriage,
no. I mean like
social
programs. Yeah,
so
social
fiscal
programs.
Conservative in the arena of these entitlement
programs.
Right, I
would say moral conservative.
Yeah, you know, it's a mixed bag with this guy. He's not an ideologue in that sense. So,
well, and that's
at least
part of his charm, I think, with a lot of Americans is that you can't put your finger on him. Yeah. He's all over the place.
Now there are some who say he is an ideologue. He's just good at playing the game, and he's
well, regardless,
actually
he is good playing the game.
Yeah,
which is why I said that press conference was the best press conference ever. And it was hilarious because I was preparing for the Newsmax interview. You were sitting at the kitchen table and I had his press conference running on my computer in the background.
Uh-huh.
And we both, as soon as he jumped on Acosta, we both got up. I went around my desk to the computer. You came away from the table and we were like, you were fist
Get
pumping
him.
In the
yeah.
air, right?
Tell
Woo,
him.
Yeah. I'm so sick and tired of the arrogance of this media elite. They didn't treat they don't treat anybody else like that.
Nobody. No president.
Nobody.
No
even George Bush didn't get treated like this. It is abrasive, it is rude, it is discourteous. It's unprofessional.
Jim Acosta gave, so there was the lady just trying to do her job, mm-hmm. you know, taking the microphone from people and giving it to people. And he like throws a forearm shiver at this lady twice to keep the microphone. It was so obnoxious.
What an elite jerk.
There again, men tear up our constitution, and from every direction we cry revolution. Standing together and without permission, soldiers for truth in the war of attrition, the love of our country as our
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Oh, but I'm only a stranger here. I'm a long, long way.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here with my husband and co-host JC Hall. Remember, you can find us at chrisannhall.com, K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E-H-A-L-L.com. You can also find our constitutional training, which is superior constitutional training in America, the best. Just ask us. It's huge. At libertyfirstuniversity.com, libertyfirstuniversity.com. And, you know, I was thinking as we were watching that, if I were standing in Donald Trump's shoes, how would I handle that situation? And I think, to be honest with you, he handled it a lot more delicately than I would have, because I think at that point when you saw Acosta actually forearm that lady,
yeah,
I would have demanded he actually been removed from the room.
I was waiting for that.
I would have demanded it.
I was seriously waiting for that.
And then, but someone, see what
someone
happens.
I was waiting for him to say, someone, get him out of here. Get him out of here.
I would have pointed out, did you see what he just did to that woman? It is time. Mr. Acosta, is that how you treat women? It's time for you to leave. And I would have had him escorted out.
Yeah.
And then you have all of the other obnoxious elite standing there screaming, you know, answer my question, answer my question. And I'm thinking, what is the point of having a White House press corps when they have absolutely no sense of professionalism whatsoever? They're paparazzis out there.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
all they are. They're overpaid paparazzis.
Yep.
And it is a disgrace to the industry of the press.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, I personally would have had Acosta removed from the room.
Yeah, me too. But, you know, he doesn't want to feed that narrative, because then they would have been, they'd have been apoplectic about that. You know, the dictator, you know, here's proof he's targeting the media, all this kind of stuff.
I don't know. I'd assured enough made it well known how he had physically touched that woman.
So one thing about it is they continue not to take any responsibility for their part in being divisive.
Yeah.
So I think at the very end, someone asked him about unity, and he said, I think it starts with the press. And she, you know, she's once again yelling back, mm-hmm, over him. Doesn't it start with you? Doesn't start with you. So they're very, it's so juvenile.
It is juvenile, and it's
arrogant.
It is very arrogant, and it's ignorant as well. And what we don't realize is that the president is not the leader of America, but that's what the press has made him. You know, Donald Trump doesn't have that kind of power.
So a couple good examples that came out about that. The one lady from PBS stands up. I don't remember her name. Ami or something. So this was really, really crazy and disgusting, where she said, where Trump said he's a nationalist. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And then you hear Trump, how he uses that term and how he expresses that. When he says nationalist, his definition is he puts America before other countries. He puts the needs of America before other countries. So that's how he understands, mm-hmm, the definition of nationalist. That's not actually correct, but that's what he meant.
That's what he means when he said it,
that's what he meant. Because he explained that. He basically said, you know, in defending what he said. But she says, okay, you said you were a nationalist. And then so she says she follows up with, so basically people take that to mean you're a white nationalist. So she totally just takes this, changes the word. Nationalist means white nationalist, which means white supremacist, which means racist, and runs on this tangent. So, and he said basically that's, you know, despicable question, embarrassing, whatever. So that's what they do, and they don't recognize their divisiveness. He didn't say white nationalist. He didn't mean white nationalist. You heard how he defined it.
Right.
And so you know, any reasonable person ought to know that's not what that meant. But yet,
right,
they reject that, and then they assign a different meaning and actually come up with a different word, right? White nationalist is not the same as nationalist. So they actually inserted a new word that was not said, and as evidence was not meant. And that's
once
how reported.
Once again, creating division.
Yeah, so
out
then,
of no division.
And then they stand there and try to
justify
defend
it.
Themselves as yeah. we're not biased, we're not manipulative, we're not fake, whatever. That's a prime example. And this is, by the way, a taxpayer-funded news organization doing this, PBS. Then the other thing, when you what you said about not understanding the power of the presidency. So the one girl, I think, was from Atlanta, one of the papers in Atlanta or something, and she basically asked him about, you know, hey, so there are long lines and people having to wait a long time in Georgia. Are you concerned? And basically kind of, what are you going to do about that? And he said, you know, you'll have to go to the state, ask the state officials. Like,
right.
So there's another one of those examples. The
right.
president has no control over state-run elections. They don't comprehend that elections are run by the state.
Right.
And so there was another example of that. But at the same time, it was trying to be put into this racial, seen through this racial lens. And it was interesting to me when, she led with long lines and people having to wait a long time. There are a lot of people who have to vote. I mean, long lines. So now long lines are racist. Having to wait a long time to vote.
Well, the weather
racist.
Is racist, too, because apparently when we were, I don't know, I think we were in a hotel getting ready to come home, and the Weather Channel was giving out the headline that the weather is going to
keep minority voters
yeah. out. Like,
this stuff, it's so tiresome. I don't, and Juan Williams, so we're watching last night
goodness,
on Fox,
Juan
Williams basically says that Andrew Gillum is losing at
and
that
Stacey
time. At
Abrams.
That time was losing. Yes, he included Stacey Abrams is losing the race because the Deep South is racist, right? So again, you talk about this media bias, media division.
Does
they
he mean
don't
Miami
see
as in Deep South? Because you don't get any deeper south than Miami.
But think about it. It's four. When you look at who voted for DeSantis, 4 million voters that Juan Williams has never met. I'm one of those voters.
Right.
I've never met Juan Williams. But he can smear an entire geographic region of 4 million people he's never met, and he classifies them as racist.
Right.
Okay, how is that not distorted, biased news? And he's basically being racist, okay, by saying all white people in the South are racist, and that's why Andrew Gillum can't win. Not about Andrew Gillum's positions, policies, you know, what he will do, his past, his record, his statements, but just simply the color of his skin. And so 4 million Floridians Juan Williams has never met, he just knows we're racist.
Because
we didn't choose his candidate. Now, here's the interesting thing.
Yeah.
John James didn't win in Michigan, but he's a Republican. So Juan Williams didn't classify
the
entire state of Michigan as racist.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. And I tweeted out to him. I said, apparently you missed Martin Luther King's speech where he said we should judge people by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. And that's what we did here. And when you judge the content of Gillum's character, you cannot elect him no matter what color he is.
Yeah. So bottom line, here's the media still biased, fake, phony, disgraceful, but they're going to twist this entire press conference as, you know, Trump the tyrant being combative, abusive. You know, I guarantee the headline is going to be, or the storyline is going to be, that despite the midterm results, Trump indicates no change in tone. That's going to be the narrative. Trump's tone is still combative, still attacking the press. And he stood there. He said, basically, I'm for free speech. I'm for free press, but I'm for a fair press. If you guys would report stuff fairly, if I make a mistake, report it, but be fair.
Right.
Make up fake stuff and distortions and mischaracterizations. And it's, you know, I mean, it's obvious to anybody with a brain.
Now, now that we've sort of thrown the Gillum thing out there, I want to mention that Ron DeSantis winning is a good thing as opposed to Gillum winning. But I want to interject a little bit of reality into the Florida euphoria over the DeSantis thing. In reality, these ridiculous constitutional amendments that Floridians voted into law overwhelmingly are 100 billion times more dangerous than Gillum would have been as governor. Think about it, Gillum would have been opposed. Gillum would have not had a day of peace. He would have not instilled taxes. Remember, the governor doesn't create taxation. That comes through the legislative branch.
He would have been a total lame duck.
He would have been a total lame duck with a Republican House, a Republican Senate, a Republican Attorney General, a Republican Commissioner of Agriculture.
Yeah, he would have no control over anything.
But once again, Floridians have voted in these insane constitutional amendments. So much so, JC, my heart sank when I saw this because I thought to myself, maybe Floridians learned when we ratified constitutionally protected rights in Florida for pregnant pigs. What an embarrassment. And then we had to go back, try this time and fix the constitutional amendment of the high-speed rail that nearly bankrupted the entire state. And I'm just sick and tired of the fact that the general constituency will vote yes for any frickin' thing.
They don't. So people do not inform themselves on these ballot initiatives. They're so, I think the feeling has been, there's so many of them. There have been so many in the past. They're so tedious because you're.
So vote no then.
Right.
Vote no. Why is it that we have such an insane preemption from saying no to anything, that we got to say yes to 12 constitutional amendments that were on the ballot? Six of those had three in amendments within them. So we're actually talking about 30 constitutional amendments that the people said yes to, and the only one they said no to was a homestead tax relief. I'm just tired of the way that things have been.
You turn me up, believer. Believer. You turn me down, you turn me up, believer. Believer.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal, our final segment of the show. Here with my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall, and
so
I'm
how,
just aggravated.
So how about a forecast? What are we looking at as a result of Tuesday?
Well, I don't think that we'll see much different. We won't see much change in Washington, D.C., other than the fact that I said that Trump should have an easier time with any future cabinet or justice appointments.
Well, Trump and Pelosi have signaled this kind of love affair.
Pelosi is a political prostitute.
Sure.
She is not going to be anything but.
And Trump is a negotiator.
And Trump is a negotiator. Trump could own Pelosi in a negotiation room because Pelosi's not going to be concerned about anything. There's one thing that I did want to talk about, JC. You've got the fact that you've got now the House majority. So people are talking about now you're going to have. Will Pelosi be the House leader? Will she not? I don't think it matters because unless they put in one of these new Democrats, it's going to be business as usual. But there are people freaking out about Maxine Waters being the head of the House Finance Committee. I even heard Judge Napolitano say that she's going to be harassing these bankers. And I really don't think so because, and I would agree with that, if people like Maxine Waters, politics was power to them. Politics is not just power for Maxine Waters. Politics is money. So what I think you're going to see is not a and Napolitano said there that the, it will grind the banking to a halt because of all of this harassment with her and all their regulations. I don't think that's going to happen. What you're going to see is Maxine Waters using her position for her own profit.
Sure.
So these bankers are going to learn really quick. Maxine Waters will give you exactly what you want if you give her the kickback that she's looking for. And I think that's the kind of corruption that you're going to see. She's not in the head of this committee for power. She's in the head of this committee for profit.
So in light of that, and I know, you know, it's not monolithic in the House, but do you overall see all of this rabid messaging from the Democrats prior to the midterms was about rallying the base and getting the support to be able to take the seats, but maybe they're not necessarily going to continue that stuff because it doesn't now beyond the midterms, it doesn't necessarily serve their ends.
Impeachment of Trump is not going to happen. You know, I mean, even if you get enough of the quote unquote new Democrats in there to draw up articles of impeachment. Remember, we've already had articles of impeachment drawn up, even with Pelosi at the head. They're not going to bring that to the floor. And even if they did, you've got such an overwhelming support now in the Senate. There'd be no censure anyway. Remember, Bill Clinton was went through House impeachment and no censure, so nothing happened, right?
So if they're going to do it, it's just going to be a lot of noise. But the real question, I think, that remains to be seen is whether they will. I wonder, because you know you have, I mean, there are a handful of really radical crazies.
Mm-hmm.
So my question, what I wonder, and I know I'm not mm-hmm. saying you have the answer or we have the answer, but what we'll have to wait and see. I am curious of what kind of control now, this is a question whether she'll be the leader or not. What kind of control will she be able to have over these folks? I'm interested to see.
Yeah, I mean, they're already saying they don't want her at all.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see how the fault lines fall out in the Democrat
Party. I will
party.
Make this prediction. I believe that the Democrats will feel pressured for impeachment. So I believe that you're going to see articles of impeachment for lesser people. You know, just as a matter of poking Trump, harassing Trump to keep him distracted on other things. I believe you could see impeachment on lesser offices, or at least articles of impeachment on lesser offices, investigations. But, you know, they're running dangerously close to the end of that rope as well.
I think you're going to see a power struggle.
Yeah, because the people are sick and tired of these investigations and the vitriol and the venom in the House. People are ready for government to reflect the prosperity the people are seeing. Well, God bless you guys. We will see you again tomorrow.
I received. Let me know.